the buzzer. McCord on its way. Oh my goodness.
They have to get it. With no timeouts, they do.
Courtside with Greenberg and Dokic, the definitive college basketball podcast.
Welcome to the world's greatest podcast. I'm Seth Greenberg with my man Dan Dokic. We're going to have Dan Gavitt join us, who's the head of the NCAA college basketball tournament and actually has an understanding of patients, protocol, and a plan. He's going to fill us in a little bit, hopefully, prior to next week's decision. But D squared. A little knuckleball from the ACC yesterday, and everyone can have an opinion, but the ACC coaches voted unanimously to have everyone go all Indiana on us. Everyone in the NCAA tournament, your opinion of that being you are a Hoosier and you played probably in the high school state tournament as one of many.
Playing the greatest afternoon in the history of the state finals in the state of Indiana, a high school tournament. Seth, I'm hearing a lot of things. I'm fine if that's what they want to do. Okay, but look, let's not make any bones about this. Every coach right now is posturing for players. Like every coach. If a player said, coach, yes, I support my player. In my opinion, that's a bit of what this is. This is trying to be, I don't know, woke or whatever. I don't know, but
you love the woke word. You used it yesterday.
I just think coaches, you know, I think you and I talked about it, and Tirico and I have talked about it. I think, you know, right now players, our coaches aren't going to say anything no to players, right? I mean, everyone's acquiescing. It wasn't so long ago that the Pac-12 players came in and made these list of demands. We demand this. Yeah, now everybody's begging to play. I think that this is look, Seth, ACC coaches know this. This is why I think there's an ulterior motive. Everybody's in the NCAA tournament. Conference tournaments are the NCAA tournament. Yep. It's very simple. If you don't lose, you don't go home. Yep. And that starts on Monday, Tuesday, whenever your conference tournament is. So everybody's in this. Obviously, there's television implications. Obviously, there's a number of things. Contracts that go into this. But in my opinion, this was kind of the ACC coaches getting out in front and saying, look at us. Look how for players we are. And nothing more than that, really, my opinion.
Well, here's the deal. It's unrealistic. You talk about the safety and well-being of the players. So you're going to add another, you know, 250 teams to the mix, another weekend of travel, another weekend of expense. If you do it for the men, you have to do it for the women. Exactly what you said. The conference tournaments are basically the first round of the NCAA tournament. It's your opportunity to earn a berth. I guess now the ACC coaches, and look, who knows where they're coming from. Like, you know, I'm going to give them credit and say, you know, it's a nice gesture. But it's not realistic. It's not realistic financially. It's not realistic in terms of doing it for men and women. It's not realistic in terms of adding a week to the tournament. It's not realistic in terms of, what if you add a week to the tournament and all of a sudden now this kid plays another game and he's playing against a team that's bad. You'll get a chance to win a championship and he gets hurt in that game. That means absolutely nothing. I mean, there's a lot of things to it. This is not everyone gets a trophy. You earn your way into the NCAA tournament. I mean, that's just the way it is.
If I can stop you right there, I think in our society, we have so much lessened expectations. And if you want to lessen expectations for a year and do it, that's fine. I mean, it really is. If that's what you got to do, if you feel that's important. But I saw Mike Bray's, you know, post-announcement text where he said players have been through so much, they deserve this. And if you really believe that, then fine. Figure it out for this year. But here's also a situation. Is it only for this year? Like, I want to say this again. I'm perfectly fine with it if that's what you want to do. Look, there's a lot of hoops to jump through. But if that's what you want to do, I'm great with it. Hope they put some of it on ESPN so we get to broadcast some of it.
Well, here's the thing, though. Like, you talk about it. Like, I understand the versatility. These are challenging times. We need to be agile. We need to be versatile. That's great. That's what we're doing in terms of getting – multiple team events going on. That's what we're doing in terms of creating potential pods and bubbles and everything. This stuff with the bubble, everyone's got to understand, the bubble is not the NBA bubble. The bubble doesn't come with barbershops. The bubble isn't where you're going to be somewhere for 2 months. Here's what the bubble is. The bubble is and more of an isolation and controlled environment where you're creating a safe environment so that you can have a protocol to check players to make sure that they stay healthy so they don't spread the virus within their own communities. So like everyone's talking about bubbles, you could have a bubble every weekend if you have that testing in place that once the players get into that bubble for say Thursday to Sunday where you're going to play three games or Wednesday to Sunday where you're going to play three games, it's a controlled environment. So coming in, if you don't have the virus, then there's a, you know, and you put them in a controlled environment, then you're creating a safe environment. So look, it's a nice gesture. To me, it's not realistic. Financially, it would be a disaster. In terms of travel and putting trying to create a safer environment, it doesn't do that. And, you know, the other thing is that we need versatility in terms of getting our season started on time. We need versatility in terms of creating some non-conference games. Come March, man, we don't have to be overly creative. Like, you know, not everyone, you know, like, well, the players missed so much. Yet some players missed last season. What about the regular student that's a theater major that can't do a show? What are we doing for that person? So, I mean, like to me, like, if this is the worst thing that ever happens, like we lost our air conditioning for about 2 weeks. And it was hot as hell around here, you know, and in my house, man, it is so hot here. This is the worst. I said, if this is the worst thing that happens to us, we're pretty good shape. You know, like play your season, compete, try to earn your way into the NCAA tournament. It's very obviously what these kids are going through is extremely difficult, but we don't need to fix what we have. We need to find a way to have a season, have a little bit of a non-conference, and that's the agility that we need and the versatility we need, in my opinion.
Yeah, nobody's been able to explain to me yet, and I know students are gone, blah, 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 blah. But no one's been able to explain to me yet why we just don't start the season like it is. I mean, I'm watching baseball play. I'm watching football play. I'm watching high schools play. I'm watching everything but the Big Ten in football play. I just don't understand. You know, we got to move it to the 25th. And I'm going to ask Dan Gavitt that. We got to move it to the 25th. We got to move it after Thanksgiving. Students will be gone. Well, students are on campus right now. I mean, I don't, nobody's told me, and I'm Dan's probably the only guy maybe that can't, why we just can't start it now. I get students are gone. It's a natural bubble. Kids take classes online, blah, blah. Okay, fine. But all right, we got to schedule. Everybody's got to schedule.
What about the West Coast teams that don't have the clear? Like there are states that don't have.
Right. That has to be solved. And I'm not, that would have to be solved. And here's another issue with it, Seth. Illinois, I think there's 14 states that if you go out of and you come into in Illinois, you have to quarantine.
14 days, right?
Yeah. So, look, I get it. Those are the challenges.
But Illinois has that testing right now on their own campus where kids get tested three times a week.
That's what I'm saying. So I'm just curious about a lot of this stuff.
A lot's going to depend on what happens in football, in my opinion.
Let me say something else. See, personally, if Dan Gavitt announced on this podcast, we are going to open up the NCAA tournament to everybody. He's not going to do that. I'm cool with that. I swear to God, I've always said the NCAA should be open to everybody. What the hell? I get it, the money. I get all the hoops.
What does it do? It diminishes the regular season and eliminates conference tournaments, which
yeah,
obviously
I mean, all right.
Conferences in a lot of ways.
We are giving you a final courtesy call before we close up your file.
Uh-oh, you got a problem. That sounds like paid electricity bill.
Calls about, like, you know, my car. I don't even own any more of that car. These people are so annoying. If I picked it up, I would curse them out, so I'm not picking it up.
Oh, that'd be good. That'd be good podcasting. I don't – Krzyzewski, been in it long enough. Bray, been in it long enough. Old Roy, been in it long enough. That they know they know more than you and I know the difficulties of doing this. That's why I say to you, everything's about recruiting. Everything's about kissing the backside of players. And in my opinion, you saw that in this announcement. And I also bet you anything, because I John Rothstein, I think, and others have said they've gotten texts from other ACC coaches saying, hey, look, man, we don't believe in this idea. We just went along because we did not want to argue with Kay and others. So,
yeah, exactly. Well, that's it. See, to me, I think it's just a gesture. It's like a pumpkin.
Yeah, it's a gesture.
People, you know, some people will leave their feet. Some people will push back. It makes them, you know, instead of making them look like grumpy veteran coaches, it makes them look like, you know, they're empathetic and they care right. and they're concerned. And that's great. And look, I'm not saying their intentions. I just know that to me, devalues the season, and there's no sense in having conference tournaments if you're going to do that. The NCAA tournament is something you earn. Hell, if that was the case, shoot, I'd still be a Virginia Tech.
Me, I'd be at Indiana.
Be in Indiana. So, I mean,
we'd have been in a tournament three times in a place that's never been in a tournament. I mean, we, you know, even if they opened it to 65, I'd be at Indiana right now. Hey, I'd also want to talk about, speaking of Indiana, Billy Donovan. Billy Donovan is out there. Billy Donovan, when I was the Billy Donovan and I are kind of friends, okay? We're great.
It's either you're not a friend or you're a kind of friend, except for me. I'm in the inner circle.
We've known each other for a long time, he and I. But I never talked to Billy Donovan more in my life, nor did I hear Billy Donovan fake act interested in me more than when I was the interim head coach at Indiana. Billy Donovan would love to be the head coach at Indiana. Scott Dolson's the AD, new AD. Got a program that hasn't won a game in the second weekend of the NCAA tournament, only one time in the second weekend, 2002, since 1993. Could Billy Donovan be to Indiana what John Calipari was when they got rid of Billy Gillespie and all of a sudden Kentucky took off? That's what I'm saying around these parts, big boy.
I think that's – I don't think they pulled the rug under Archie. Was it year three or was it year four?
Four.
No, they're not – well, if they're not an NCAA tournament team, I think he'd be under some significant pressure. I don't know what their financials are in terms of buyouts and everything else. I don't like putting guys on the hot seat. I mean, here's the deal. Whatever job is open at a high level – if he wants to, Billy Donovan will be involved with it, whether it's Indiana or anywhere else. Does Billy Donovan, when you speak to those guys that have been to the NBA, those dudes do not want to come back, even though they make themselves different because they have all the kids want to get to the league. They know what it is to get to the league, that he's won in the league. But I'm not one, and this is just me. And you're in Indiana, and that's your school. I don't talk about specific jobs with people until jobs are open. That's just me. Whatever job opens up at the highest level, if Billy wants to be interested, they're going to be interested in him. Whether it's MBA, whether he can get the job or not, I don't know, or whether it's college. He's going to be on the top of everyone's list to not only win the press conference, but just as importantly, put their program in position to compete at the highest level. Now, he got tired of recruiting. His last few recruiting classes, not very good at Florida. He got tired of the drama that goes along with college basketball in a lot of ways. But he's different now. And he's different now in that because he's got the caveat of being a very successful NBA coach that understands the business of the NBA and can then – and the development of players to make sure that they are ready for the NBA. So,
man, that's a very, 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 very mature answer right there. That's very mature.
I don't have a radio show 3 hours a day, 5 days a week.
I know. But in our world, you know, this is what I get. Hey man, he could be to, you know, all of a sudden if Billy Donovan comes someplace and you're a college team, man, you got instant credibility, national relevance. Whether it's Indiana, and he's not going to stay out there for long, unless he wants to. He's 55 years old.
He doesn't have to work, Coach. He's made a couple of dollars.
No, but I think it's going to be interesting whether or not he goes to college or whether or not he stays in the NBA. Let me ask you this. You're talking about bubbles. I mentioned that I don't understand why the season can't start. How do you see this season progressing? How do you see this starting?
I see it starting right at Thanksgiving, the day before, the day after. I think we're going to have our exempt events. I think we will have teams with like protocols play against each other in non-conference and a limited non-conference schedule. A big question I had for Dan is, what's the minimum number of games a team has to play to be eligible for the NCAA tournament? What's the maximum that you allow them to play? The other thing I want to know from Dan is there going to be a set protocol that the NCAA is going to basically dictate if you meet this protocol, then you can play. I think that's league driven. I know a league, if I'm in a Big Ten and I have a protocol, I'm not playing a team from, say, the MAC unless they have the exact same protocol, because I'm not risking the health and well-being of not only a player, but my program.
You know, I hear people say this all the time. Well, these smaller schools don't have the same testing. Well, let me ask you a question.
They do. They just don't have the money to do it as many times.
Okay, so let me ask you this. Well, I've been watching a lot of football. I've seen, I don't know, Marshall playing. I've seen these schools playing. I mean, they got 100-plus guys. How does everybody know that these schools don't have the money for testing? I coached at a MAC school. I think if we'd have had this situation, we'd have had money for the test. Why does everybody assume that?
I think the big thing is, like, you know, they're trying to put together an exempt event in at the Mohegan Sun. They're trying to align with Hartford Healthcare and Jeff Flax, the CEO, is a friend of mine. They're going to try to partner with them. Obviously, it's a win-win. And I think that's what's going to happen. But you know what we got to do right now?
Tell me.
Call Dan Gavitt, because he's going to visit with us, or he's calling in, and we can talk to him about college basketball moving forward. All right, let's get this started. So I know you're busy, and we really do appreciate you coming on and visiting with us. We'd like to welcome in Dan Gavitt, the head of the NCAA college basketball process, worked for the NCAA, and basically overseeing from the day that the season was canceled last year, probably to right now. I probably got to ask you, what percentage of your day has been spent on figuring out a plan and protocol to moving the college basketball season ahead?
Well, pretty much all of it, within other responsibilities. But yeah, it's been a pretty labor intensive process, but important, obviously, for the game, for the players, for the coaches. And we've been working on it, of course, across the entire summer.
Hey Dan, where are we with it? I've said on this and other places, this is probably an idiotic statement to make to you, but I'm going to make it anyway. Why can't basketball just be started as it's already set up?
Sure. No, it's not a bad question at all. The season is planned currently to start on November 10th, Tuesday, November 10th, as it is every year. There's been a lot of consideration given to whether to leave it on November 10th to consider a delayed start. Some have even advocated for delaying to start in the second semester in early January. I think it's a lot of things, Dan. We're trying to do this in as much of a unified way as possible. We've got 32 conferences that, you know, go from coast to coast and north to south, and varying levels of resources around testing, which is fundamental to any successful start for the basketball season. And we're also taking into consideration the, you know, conditioning and preparedness of student athletes for the start of the season. All of those things being considered, we're trying to build consensus and really work on a grand compromise to do it in the most effective and safe and unified way. And the reason I say all that is that we already know, for example, as it relates to the start of a competitive season, that two of the 32 conferences have decided they're not starting until January. That's the Pac-12 and the Ivy League. We have many others that are ready to start in different regions of the country on November 10th, given what's going on in their state or their state restrictions or the spread of COVID-19 in their geographic area. But then others, even in their same league, that are not prepared to do so on time on November 10th. So the process has been trying to point to something that is somewhat of a compromise that gets as many of the 350 plus Division I schools and 32 conferences on the same page to do it as unified as possible. It's still not going to be 100% no matter what, unless we were to move to January. And then also taking into consideration, like I mentioned, the preparedness of student athletes. You know, we have some that at higher resource institutions that have been able to be on campuses this summer training and are in decent playing shape and ready to maybe start with practice on time on September 29th and the season on November 10th. We got a lot of others, not a few, a lot of others that have not been able to be on campus since early March and have been training on their own. And there's a pretty significant concern among the medical folks that from a physical and mental well-being standpoint, they may not be ready to go on time on November 10th. So it's trying to take all those things into consideration. You can make a reasonable and rational argument to leave it on November 10th, to delay it by a couple of weeks, or even to delay it until January. But we're trying to take all those kind of different perspectives into consideration to get to the point where it's maybe the best consensus and compromise for all. Still being likely imperfect, because no one size is going to fit every institution and every conference perfectly.
The Pac-12 and, say, the Ivy League, or do they have any flexibility? Because I've talked to some coaches in the Pac-12 that have kind of communicated to me that they have had some conversation about potentially moving off that January 1st date. Obviously, depending on where they are within their specific regions within the conference in terms of the states. Is there dialogue with any of those conferences saying, you know, is this a hard out, or is this something that has some flexibility to it? Because, you know, let's face it, a lot of those Pac-12 schools, they don't even start school until the end of September. A lot of times, because they're on quarterly systems.
Quarter system. Yeah. Well, ultimately, it will be a presidential decision, as it should be. That was the group that made the decision on fall sports in the Pac-12 and then every other conference. And that'll be the same case with winter and spring sports. So ultimately, it'd be a presidential decision, and I'm sure they're going to make it in the best interest of their student athletes. And equally as importantly, and fans of basketball and football lose sight of this a little bit. I think these presidents are making decisions not just on athletics; they're making it about their institution overall. You know, in Southern California, a month or so ago, they had very significant issues, even just on an institutional basis, with doing anything at all in kind of inside or any kind of group setting at all. And somewhat maybe the case in Arizona as well. Whereas in the Mountain States, maybe that wasn't the case in the Pac-12, for example. So I've heard the same thing, Seth, that, you know, there may be some hope by the coaches and maybe some consideration ultimately by the presidents and conference to consider. A slightly earlier start than January 1st, but ultimately that'll be the conference and the presidents to decide.
Hey, Dan, I got this yesterday, so I'm going to ask you. I read where the Mountain West said they're going forward with winter sports as planned. Does that include basketball? And if so, who are they playing?
Well, I've not heard that specifically, Dan, but certainly Craig Thompson, their commissioner, is on the Division I Men's Basketball Committee and, you know, got a close working relationship with. My sense is that they'd be going forward with the start of basketball, whenever that may be. If it's moved, then that would be the new date. And if it's the current date of November 10th, then it would be that. My sense is that comment probably was in relation to the fact that they're not playing football, but their presence may be open-minded to start basketball, even though fall sports are not happening on schedule in the Mountain.
Dan, as you know, when you read it on Twitter, it's 1,000% fact. So, you
know. Dan, is it the NCAA's responsibility there, or the conference's responsibility, to create a protocol that across the board would fit college basketball? Because, you know, let's face it, the Power Five conferences have resources maybe that other conferences don't have. So therefore, you know, there's a wide disparity of what different institutions can do. Are you guys trying to come up with a protocol that says if you fulfill X, Y, and Z, then we can begin, your team can begin playing? Or are you going to leave, is that left to the commissioners and the presidents within a specific leagues?
That's a great and insightful question, Seth. So the NCAA, i.e. the membership, in this case, makes the decision on when a competitive season can start, when practice can start, et cetera. So that's what we're working on as it relates to the start of the season, is whether the Division I Council, who has authority in this area, wants to decide to delay the start of the season and make the first permissible date, November 25th, for example, as one possibility. After that's determined, then it's up to the conferences and institutions to decide when they start or how they start, whether it's with conference games, non-conference games, or MTEs or whatever it may be. The NCAA doesn't legislate, you know, what the mix of those games are or when they should be. Just when that first permissible date to start is. And so the regular season, to kind of sum it up, is really the auspices of the conferences and institutions. The postseason is under the auspices of the NCAA staff and committee.
So having said that, is there going to be a minimum number of games a team has to play to be NCAA tournament eligible? Or a maximum number of games that you guys could come out and say that, you know, because right now there's a maximum number of games that you're allowed to play. But because of obviously the uncertain times that we're in, is there going to be a minimum number of games that you have to play to be NCAA tournament eligible? Some teams will not have championship week because it's obviously another expense. It's also another potential situation where creating that bubble might be difficult, especially with large leagues across a whole bunch of states.
Yes. So the minimum number of games from a sports sponsorship standpoint in basketball right now is 25. That doesn't specifically have to do with the tournament. That's just to be an NCAA Division I member institution, 25 games minimum. There likely will be a recommendation to reduce that number, probably significantly, in light of the pandemic and the challenges around scheduling and testing and potentially game disruption, you know, due to infection or exposure. So that number likely will be reduced maybe as much as 50% down to 13 games. That's a membership issue. As it relates to the NCAA tournament, the basketball committee has said they're going to apply great flexibility in conferences' ability to determine their automatic qualifier, their AQ. So if there's an unequal number of games, for example, or something of that nature, or a conference tournament can't be played, and the conference wants to determine their regular season champion as the AQ, the conferences will have that flexibility this year to do that and to do it later, much later than we would in any other year. And then from a maximum standpoint, the maximum number of games currently is 31. That's if you participate in an MTE, right, multi-team event, like Maui or Battle for Atlantis. And it may be that we just stay at the maximum number to provide institutions and conferences the greatest flexibility in scheduling or rescheduling games as necessary. Or it may be that they reduce that number slightly in conjunction with the number of play dates that would be eliminated if the season start is delayed.
You came out yesterday and said no contingency plans for expanding the tournament. That was in response to the ACC's vote, correct?
It was in response, Dan, to more than just that. We've had other suggestions in the membership and others around the format of the tournament. And we just thought the timing was right to kind of address that so that, because we were getting appropriate media inquiries about it and certainly curiosity about whether that's something that we're actually working on or considering at this point. And I thought it was important to clarify that we're not. But that doesn't mean that we wouldn't. At this point, what I said is factual, and we're really focused on the start of the season. And we've been working on contingency planning, of course, for the tournament all summer, and we'll continue to. Rather than have kind of confusion out there about what may or may not be considered at this point in early September, I thought it was important to clarify that.
Yeah, Dan, I think it's important for people to understand that. And correct me if I'm wrong on this, and I'd certainly love to hear your thought, but what's true right now may not be true in a week, right?
100%, Dan. I mean, we've exercised really appropriate patience and discipline throughout the whole summer to not make decisions before they were necessary, to really learn about the effects of COVID-19 on individuals, all of us, student athletes, most importantly, and the effect of what it does in a sports scenario. We've learned a great deal over the course of the summer from the excellent work that the NBA and WNBA have done in Orlando and Bradenton, and then among our membership with getting some fall sports started, especially college football. We're all hopeful we'll go off well here, and and proceed, you know, according to plan with some conferences. But it does change on a weekly and certainly monthly basis. I mean, we've gotten so many positive developments just in the last couple of weeks around testing. You know, the saliva direct test that the NBA and WNBA supported that came out of Yale University. There's a lot of good work being done at the University of Illinois with a similar test for their student body and their student athletes. And so really fundamental to all of this, starting the season in a healthy, safe and responsible way, is that availability of testing, widespread availability, cost effective availability of that testing. Because in order to do college basketball safely and responsibly, we need to have confidence that you know, we're not having players who are infected, you know, play against each other. And in order to do that, you need to test on a regular basis. So, I think you're 100% right that we learn, you know, on a weekly and certainly monthly basis. And so we may adjust things. You know, what I say today on, you know, September 10th is indeed what is the situation today. But I can't predict what it's going to be like on October 10th or November 10th. And we're going to continue to monitor it, work on it as Seth asked, right, to start on a daily and hourly basis, and try to get to a point where we can have a successful season, a fulfilling season. And I'm confident we will, but I'm sure that things will change.
Dan, I think you've showed, and I use these three P's, and it's patience, having multiple plans and protocol in place. And I think you've done an incredible job in terms of plans. Like, obviously, we have to have an NCAA tournament this year, or at least ideally, we need to have one. Can you see that being all 68 teams at one site? Could you still see teams going off each week to regions? I get a kick out of people saying, you know, when people think it's the bubble, they think it's the NBA and all of that. Basically, what we need to do is we need to create isolation situations where we can isolate the players to put them in the healthiest environment possible. What kind of environments are you guys looking at for the tournament in terms of, you know, we announce the field, do we bring everyone to one site or each and every week, are we going to have moving parts? What are the conversations you guys are having about that?
Well, I like the three P's, Seth. I might borrow that and give you credit.
Don't give him credit. Take it for yourself. No, it cheapens the message if it's him.
Not at all. It enhances it. There's all sorts of contingencies that we are considering because we're anxious to and confident we will have a really good NCAA tournament, both men's and women's. And we're having to look at all sorts of different scenarios in order to do that in a safe and responsible way. I think, you know, a few things. One is we've got a lot of people and entities involved with running the NCAA tournament. We have 14 different hosts. Host conferences and institutions and cities and venues that put on this incredible event every year. That's just on the men's side. Right. And the more obviously on the women's side as well. We have very valued broadcast partners for both of those events and corporate partners and champions and the like. So we have to consider all those things when we're making decisions about any kind of changes to format or dates or anything else around the tournament. And some of that, frankly, has to be done in private and confidentially, because just because you explore one contingency plan doesn't mean you're going to move forward with it. And yet, if you do it in a more public way, then it creates anxiety and challenges for all of those, you know, stakeholders and partners that we have in order to do this. So, we are looking at all different sorts of different scenarios. I think you make a good distinction between a bubble scenario and a more controlled scenario. Of course, the bubble in the NBA and WNBA has worked quite well, but it's very restrictive. It's very expensive, and it's worked great. But there's been other, you know, similar type scenarios that I would say are more controlled that are also working fairly effectively as well. And so we're studying those that may be more practical in application than creating a bubble that, you know, that is going to last for 3 months in the case of the NBA, for example. we've talked with, you know, with medical experts. They've created scenarios for a venture capital group, for example, you know, to create a bubble so they can do their work effectively. It's not just sports we're looking at. Mm-hmm. But yes, we're hopeful and planning on one track to have the tournament with 68 teams and all 14 venues and sites. And then we're also have other contingencies that, you know, that would consider, that different setups, fewer sites, alternate sites. We have to take into consideration, of course, whether there'll be fans or not, or restricted fans, and what kind of venues would be most conducive in those type of scenarios. So, you know, I think it's natural when fans and media, you know, don't hear about all the contingencies that maybe the concern is, are they even thinking about these things? The simple answer is yes. I mean, the basketball committee is meeting every 2 weeks and has been for a couple months now, to go through all these different contingencies. And at the appropriate time and place, if we need to make any adjustment, we will. But now is not the right time in early September, we believe, going back to Dan's question about, because things change every week and every month. And so at some point, kind of like the start of the season, we'll get to a point where we have to make a decision. I do believe we have to make a decision on the start of the season by next week, because there needs to be planning that takes place for coaches and programs and administrators and TV networks and the like. But we're not there yet with an event that's scheduled to take place in March.
You mean that, like, the gurus that think you're just sitting in your office twiddling your thumbs and come up and go, we haven't heard from the NCAA in a while, they must not be doing anything. That's not really true. And they as they give you all this sage advice.
Not exactly. You can ask my family for feedback on that question.
Dan, is there any other, you have your meeting this next week, to decide when at least the season projected is going to start. Your gut feeling, do you think we will have non-conference basketball? Just off a gut from the feedback you're getting or from the people you're talking to, the committee members that are helping you guys through the day-to-day discussions. Do you think we'll have non-conference basketball? If we do, I would expect everyone would have the same protocol.
Yes, I do believe we will. And the protocol, the testing around any competition, non-conference or conference, will be similar. But the application of that conference to conference, school to school, may be different. So I definitely think we'll have non-conference competition, whether it be MTEs, conference challenges, rivalry games, the number of those non-conference games, how they're, you know, set up, whether they be, you know, on campus or in a bubble type of setting where, you know, where multiple teams can come together and play in a controlled environment. I think that'll be different. I think there'll also be schools and conferences that'll make decisions for some, in some cases, financial reasons, or other institutional reasons, regional state restrictions that may not be able to play many, or in some cases, any non-conference games, as the case may be. But I do believe that, broadly speaking, there will be non-conference games. And I think that's what student athletes want. That's the feedback we've gotten from them is, you know, they do have desire to play in some number of non-conference opportunities, some of these great events that we all enjoy in November and December. And there seems to be a real opportunity to do so, given the fact that 75% of all Division I schools by the Thanksgiving holiday will either be completely done with their first semester, including exams, or they'll at least have moved from in-person instruction to virtual instruction and online exams that would take place after Thanksgiving. So it's got this, you know, 6-plus week period from the Thanksgiving time period through early January to be able to be more creative in scheduling and playing games around a time when students don't have to be on campus, you know, for in-person instruction. So that's why I have some confidence that there will be non-conference games. And I think there'll be some conference games in those windows too, because, you know, for some leagues, that'll make really good sense for them to get together and play a portion of their conference schedule during that time period also.
Great. Dan, we can't thank you enough for spending time with. I know you got 8,000 people pulling at you, and we do appreciate you. From me and Dan, I just tell you, I can't thank you enough for the work that you guys are doing. I understand, unfortunately, you have some people in the quote-unquote media don't understand how hard you guys work, and that the NCAA basically just enforces the rules, that the membership makes the rules, and the NCAA, you guys are working really hard to make sure that we have this event, because you know, there's also a mental health aspect to all these young kids that are wanting to compete and wanting to continue their athletic careers while they're in school. So we really do appreciate you being with us. Thank you so much.
Hey, Dan, I just want to say thank you for stepping up. I mean, again, I'm from the outside, but man, at least externally, what an unbelievable job you've done of stepping up into a leadership role during this time. And as a basketball guy, you know, college basketball guy, I can't thank you enough, man. Great stuff. Thank you very much.
Well, I appreciate you guys' support. I'm just fortunate to, you know, help to facilitate this. And we want to be able to provide a safe and responsible experience, to these student athletes, these teams. To your point, Seth, they all want, like we all want, some level of normalcy back in our lives. If we can do it in a safe and responsible way, that's what we're trying to achieve. It may not be perfect, but the more close we can get to normal, and you know, is what our ultimate goal is.
That's awesome.
Thank you so much. Be safe.
That's great stuff right there, Seth. That's great stuff.
He's a very, very bright guy. He's a great guy.
Thanks to Dan Gavitt. I mean, that was fantastic information. Seth Greenberg, myself, Taylor. We'll talk to you next time. Make sure you give us a 5-star, 10-star, whatever the hell rating. Have a great, great week, everybody.
Thank you for listening to Courtside with Greenberg and Dockage. You can listen and subscribe to all ESPN podcasts in the Listen tab of the ESPN app, including the latest from the NBA and the Hoop Collective podcast, available in the ESPN app or Apple Podcast.